This is East Carolina offensive coordinator Donnie Kirkpatrick. We are talking one of my favorite things. Hired football on the Sports Objective. The official unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Where it is a first down. Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I am your fill-in host, Kyle Barber. Dave Richmond is live on assignment tonight. He'll be back with us later. As always, we're joined by Bubba Rosenbaum. Bubba's going to be busy tonight. He'll chime in when he can. But we got East Carolina linebacker from the Steve Logan era, Matt Semenza, here with us as always. Matt, how you doing, buddy?
Kyle, I'm doing great. Starting to get excited for the bowl games ahead and really looking forward to catching up tonight with Coach Rick Minter, who I've had an opportunity to coach, follow your career through the years, and also have the perspective to play against your teams, Coach, which we're always disciplined and hard-nosed and ready to play. So, Coach, just want to say hello and welcome you into the show.
Well, I appreciate it, fellas. Look forward to it.
Coach, everybody remembers back when you were in Cincinnati. Back during the 90s, you had some success. Gino Gadulli, everybody remembers him in those years. And you won a Conference USA Championship in the early 2000s. But just to jump right into it, did you ever think in your wildest dreams when you were at Cincinnati in the 90s and early 2000s that they would be in a position one day to be, contending for a national championship?
Well, quite honestly, no. We certainly had envisioned, it's ironic, in my last year there, it was 03, following that co-championship year, the year before, 02, that we clinched down there. Gary Patterson was the co. They went to the Liberty Bowl. We went to the New Orleans Bowl. Next year, we had a good football team, but we had some unlucky things. So in October the 1st, we were accepted into the Big East Conference, effective, 05. So that was another a good full season away. I'll tell you what, we were looking forward to that. We'd battled our tails off for 7 or 8 years. And then all of a sudden, here's the new banner you're looking for. And it's called the Big East. So I'm up on that podium down at the Cincinnati Hilton Hotel on October the 1st, 2003. I'm on there. Bob Huggins is on there representing basketball. And our athletic director at the time, Bob Golden, was up there representing, of course, administration. None of us ever saw the Big East. Okay. I got fired a few months later after we, kept losing a couple of fourth quarter leads, and we ended up 5-7. My last 4 years on the job was 7-5, 7-5, 7-6, and then 5-7, and then they, terminate me. And one of the reasons, speaking of the advancement of the program, was later in years, I talked to Bob Goen, and I said, why did you fire me? Because you never told me that day why I was fired. He says, I just looked at it. Once we got the Big East banner, I saw the opportunity to advance the program with someone else's vision. You had been there 10 years, and, you kind of capped out around 7 wins. I wanted to see if we could get somebody to take it to a higher level. Hence, look at them now. They're in the friggin' college football playoffs. Bless their hearts. But we thought going to the Big East would be the right step. And if you remember, thinking about comparing 2009, I was long gone. You had D'Antonio there for 3. You had Brian Kelly there for 3. And I was thinking about this today as I was on a walk. Cincinnati, after this game coming up, in the last 15 years, 12 years, they would have played in the Orange Bowl, the Sugar Bowl, the Cotton Bowl, and the Peach Bowl in the last dozen years. Now, did we ever think about that when I was coming along? Not necessarily, perhaps that high. But Brian Kelly took the program to an unforeseen height in 08, 09. He got a Big East championship in 08, went to the Orange Bowl, got beat by Va Tech, I believe it was. Then they went to the Sugar Bowl, and he went 12-0. But that's exactly the time he got hired at Notre Dame. It's kind of funny that the whole twist and turn here, right? Because the people of Cincinnati have never forgiven Brian Kelly for leaving them and jumping ship going into that Sugar Bowl game. Now, we all know who've been around. You got to do that. I mean, recruiting calls, the new job calls. You weren't playing for the national championship. You were just playing in a good, you know, highly ranked game in the Sugar Bowl playing Florida. But he took off, and they've never forgiven him. Well, who did they beat this year that was the, you know, the bell cow on their schedule that vaulted them into the college football playoff? They beat a Brian Kelly football team, so it's almost like payback. But, no, Brian and I became good friends and have always stayed good friends. He did a great job there. Butch Jones followed, did a good job there. Tommy Tuberville was last there before Luke Fickell got hired. And Tommy and I are really good friends all the way back to our college football days. We're both from Arkansas and Texas. And he did not do the job everybody had anticipated. The AD up at Va Tech was the guy that hired him. They had worked together at Auburn years earlier. And so he reached out to him from Texas Tech. That's that story about Tommy taking the phone call on the recruiting dinner, walks outside, takes the call, drives home, never talks to the recruits again, and is accepted the job at Cincinnati the next morning. But Tommy and I were good friends, as I mentioned. I'd come down and visit with him. And the job just, you know, maybe he took it. He told me himself he took it as a retirement job, and that's kind of how he acted. I mean, that's kind of how the program performed, and then they retired him until he became Senator Tuberville. But, yeah, so the program was a good program through the Big East. Then it had turned into the American Conference when the Big East fell apart and went all basketball again with the Catholic schools. And then the formation came, and it kind of reverted back to a little bit of the old Conference USA days with some of the members, yourselves included. And it's a good league, very, very good league. And Cincinnati's begun to do a good job there, but they did that by hiring Luke Fickell. And Luke did a great job. He was a born and raised Ohio guy. That program is run exactly like Ohio State was being run under Urban and of Jim Tressel. And that's his two mentors, along with D'Antonio, of course, which is his position coach in college. So he's done a great job. It's he's got a great culture there. You've witnessed it up close on the field. Their kids really have an esprit de corps amongst them. He's just a good old-fashioned defensive ball coach and special teams type guy. They're doing a good job running the offense. And ironically, Gino Gadulli is on that staff, you know, who used to quarterback for us, but he's on that staff. So they've made a meteoric rise. Everything had to fall in place for them. In spite of being 13-0, it still had to fall into place for them to make it to the top four. And we'll talk about that, I'm sure, as we get going here. But, you know, they had to have Ohio State out of the way. You had to have Clemson out of the way. You had to have Oklahoma out of the way. You know, Alabama and Georgia was in, so that tightened the window up a little bit. And then you had Michigan on board. And then all of a sudden, if it hadn't been for that pylon game down there in Oklahoma State and Baylor, there would have been a big argument that night. You know, if Okie State would have won, and then it got down to the Big 12 champion, one loss, and a no-loss American, it still was that Notre Dame went on the road. And I think of all the teams this year who got credit for something they did last year, I think it was Cincinnati. Everybody looks at that Peach Bowl of last year and said, hey, they played with those fellas toe-to-toe and kind of earned the right to be respected. So when they came into the season, stayed in the top 10 all year, didn't ever have to back it up and put the pedal back down. They just got, you know, a ranking from last year's team and the respect, and they lived up to it with the road win at Indiana, the road win at Notre Dame, of course. And then they had to have Notre Dame keep winning. I mean, it would have been one thing, because Notre Dame was not that good of a team compared to what any listeners are saying out there. They were not a good team. It was a great coaching job to get them to 11-1, but they were not a dominant, typical Notre Dame football team. But they had to win out to make Notre Dame's, or to make Cincinnati's game look really credible, as it was, yeah. You know.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think you're 100% right when you're saying that everything had to be perfect. It had to be the perfect storm for Cincinnati to get in. And, you know, another thing that I think helped Cincinnati a little bit, it would have been interesting to see if Oklahoma State would have won. Houston having a strong season and also being ranked in the top 25 of the college football playoff rankings when they played Cincinnati in the championship game, I think that also helped a little bit from a perspective standpoint. I kind of wish Oklahoma State would have won. just to see if the committee would have done the right thing.
I totally agree with you, Kyle. And I was not a proponent of the committee. I mean, I just didn't think I saw it. You know, I mean, I saw it coming in my heart. I was pulling for the Bearcats, obviously. In my head, like anybody else following college football, it is still a little different. You guys experience it all the time. But an American Conference schedule, top to bottom, doesn't necessarily weigh in on a SEC schedule. Sometimes a Big Ten, you could argue. Big 12 is not a dominant league, but a Big 12 champion would have still been a formidable champion, even with the one loss. So I'd like to have heard that argument too. And I think all part of the conspiracy theory, the way I would look at it, I think the committee screwed Houston from the get-go. I mean, why are they way down there, not even ranked the first time the committee came out? They were like 7-8-0 or 7-8-1. They lost to Texas, you know, that first game. But even as they continued to win, I'm talking about the Cougars, they never quite got the push and the respect. I always think that coaches' polls and press polls are at least be adhered to a little bit, because you got two different groups of people. Press can have their own objectives and, you know, missions, and coaches the same way. But the coaches and the press both were always putting Houston around 15, 16, 17 when the committee would not even rank them. Now, something's wrong with that picture right there. When you begin to have a 3-loss Wisconsin, a 3-4 loss Mississippi State, just to keep Houston out of there, because I thought they saw it coming. And I don't mean to be the, you know, it didn't happen, so we don't have to dwell. But I really think they were looking for UC not to have that marquee win, as Kyle brought up, that helped them in the very end, because they squashed Houston. I was at that game. It was nip and tuck first half, and then they put 21 on them in the third quarter like nobody's standing still, and then held on. And it was the most glorious sight I've ever seen at Nippert Stadium this year. I was up in the box with one of my former players, linebacker Troy Evans, and Troy played in the league for 10 years and all that kind of stuff, and now he's rich and famous in Cincinnati, got him a box. And I'm up there watching the end of that game and watching the probably 30,000 fans storm that field like I've never seen before. It was the most electric atmosphere. I had been to a couple of games, and it certainly had way improved. But, I mean, that game that night was just unbelievable, with 42,000-plus screaming for the Bearcats. And, you know, the committee didn't really have a whole lot of arguments there that night to start talking about, because of how the whole day played out. Alabama winning. And here's the deal. If Alabama had a loss like everybody thought they were going to lose, Notre Dame would have got in the playoffs. You know?
That would have been fun.
Yeah. Nobody wanted to see. I don't think anybody wanted to see Notre Dame in the playoff again. I mean, as good as and consistent as they've been over the years, Coach, they really haven't represented themselves well in bowl games in the Brian Kelly era. You know, era, unfortunately. So I was sort of, you know, on the outside looking in, hoping it wasn't going to be Notre Dame.
Right. I mean, they haven't lived up to it, no question.
Yeah,
it has to have a little bit to do with why Brian took the job at LSU. I mean, I know Brian well. He's 60 years old. Somebody offer you 10 years, $100 million, that'll get your attention. And number two, you know, just the chance to coach that kind of roster. Because I've coached against those guys. When I was at, ironically, Notre Dame back in 05, 06, we played LSU in the Sugar Bowl, the January 1, 07 Sugar Bowl. And we were tied 14 all at the half, got beat 42-14. Our offense made 30 yards of offense second half, and I pulled every plug I got. We couldn't stop them to save my life. And an NFL scout told me that year that 9-2, 10-2 type LSU team was by far the most talented team in the country. And at LSU, it's a great job, because the last three coaches in a row have won national titles. Nick. Yeah. Les and the O, and two of them are less than great coaches. Nick Saban, of course, stands on his own, but those other two guys, good football coaches, and still won a title at LSU, perhaps in spite. O had the perfect storm back in 19 or whenever he won it, with all that talent and everything else. They had 14 players drafted off that football team. Tells you about LSU as a job. I think that's why Brian took that job. And even though it'll be tough week in and week out, it's still a great opportunity to perhaps win one. reflecting Coach. Back on what Matt said, they weren't going to win one at Notre Dame. They could get in the playoffs, but you just don't – they just don't quite measure up. They got a better – I'll tell you right now, and we could talk about Notre Dame all day, but we won't. Notre Dame will have a better chance recruiting from this day forward. More five-star blue chip guys that can help make a difference with Marcus being the head coach than with Brian. And that's not personally directed at Brian as a negative. He did a hell, you know, he did a great job there. Four straight 10-win seasons, two out of three last playoffs. At least you're getting there. At least you're getting a shot at it. But they were not equipped to beat Clemson and Alabama and Georgia and those kind of teams.
Coach, since we're talking about Notre Dame, this fascinates me. I'd like to get your perspective on it. What do you think it is that kind of holds them back to from really cracking that top five? Is it team speed? Is it lack of athleticism, you know, at receiver? You know, what is it that you see that prevents them from sort of, you know, crossing that barrier from a top 10 team into that top four?
It's mostly defensive players and team speed. I mean, they get good defensive players, but they don't get those war daddies up front that Georgia and Alabama and LSU get across their front. They just can't get them in school. Those kind of guys may not want to go there. I've been there twice. I mean, it takes a certain kind of kid to want to go to Notre Dame. It's a great place. It's a wonderful place. They have the nation's landscape to try to get their 20, 25 guys a year. But they're going to always have great offensive linemen. They're going to have big tight ends. They're going to have big, strong wideouts, but not a lot of linear speed. They're going to have solid guys. They're going to have some linebackers. Every now and then a D lineman and a pass rusher. But you're going to get good, solid DBs, but you're not going to get Alabama-like corners. The two corners that play for Cincinnati, you guys have seen them. Those are both NFL corners. They're better than the corners right now at Notre Dame. And they just don't get them. When I was there, I was doing a podcast with Chris Zorch, the great D lineman of Notre Dame of way yesteryear. Back in the day when I was there the first time with Lou, 92-93, if you took that Notre Dame program from about 88 down to about 92, like 93 when I was there, that was Alabama back then because, I mean, we had some dudes on both sides of the ball. We had, you know, some, you know, they had Tim Brown come through there. They had, you know, five and six number ones a year for a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years. So that's kind of like Alabama was, but they're not quite there right now. I do think with Marcus, they'll have a better chance to get their foot in the door of some of the minority players that may qualify and have great grades that go there, but just have never been turned on to that regimentation and the way it takes to survive there at Notre Dame. You know, just take a special guy that sees life much greater than the 4 years in front of him, but more about the next 40 years after that to be a Notre Dame grad and business opportunities and all those types of things. But to answer your question, their recruiting is good, but it just can't quite match up with Alabama, Georgia, A&M. I mean, you just look at all the SEC schools, how much talent they're bringing in. It just doesn't quite equate right now at Notre Dame.
Coach, we'll wind up the Notre Dame discussion with this, I guess. We got a peak in Notre Dame playing in a conference during the COVID year of 2020 and with the ACC. Do you think it would benefit them? You know, I know that's a question that's asked all the time. Do you think it would benefit them to join the ACC or the Big Ten at this point, or no. Are they just always going to be an independent, or would it make a difference?
No, I don't think so. Having been there and talked to Lou Holtz and all those kind of people and the AD that was before Jack and all that, but Notre Dame is a national brand, almost a worldwide brand. And the moment you join a conference, be it the Big Ten or the ACC, you become a regional school. You know, not that you don't have some national appeal, but you become a regional school. You're going to play a lot of your games in that area. And so they want to go solo. They've got their own television contract. I mean, why do you want to be in a league, right? Consistency in scheduling, develop some rivalries, and revenue share. That's kind of the objectives of being in a conference. Otherwise, everybody could just play independent, you know. Notre Dame isn't independent. They got their own TV money. They've got some natural rivalries, but they don't just marry themselves to not getting some other ones. And they've got consistency in scheduling right now because they are a quasi-member of the ACC, what I call it. because they play five games a year in the ACC. That's the freight they have to pay for them, the ACC members, taking on all their other sports and giving them full membership in other sports. You don't think – I remember it happened a couple of years ago. And then also what happens, they play those five games. Also then they get in the bowl pecking order of the ACC's order if they don't reach the college football playoff. Now, you think that makes the guys at West Virginia, what used to be West Virginia, they're in the Big 12 now, but these other schools around the ACC, and it happened like 4 or 5 years ago, that when you get to the bowl pecking orders, most bowl games in their right mind would take Notre Dame if they had a chance, right? They're going to bring great fans. They're going to spend a ton of money. They're going to be a great TV draw, and they'll make their bowl game a bonanza. And so the Gator Bowl, I think it was, took Notre Dame above somebody else that was, you know, had a better record and all this kind of stuff, and maybe even a better regional draw that particular year. But it's the appeal of Notre Dame. So the ACC coaches don't like it necessarily that they're just kind of half in, half out, but get all the benefits of being in with all their other sports taken care of. But as far as football goes, it happened last year with COVID, there's no doubt, and it kind of measured them a little bit. They had a good, solid team. Clemson had a great team, and they split. And obviously COVID had a lot to do with it, or not necessarily COVID, but injuries. Remember, Trevor Lawrence didn't play in that game up at Notre Dame. And so, you know, they split, got in the playoffs, got embarrassed again. But, back when I was there, it was all about, are we going to join the Big Ten or not? You know, now it's kind of shifted over to the ACC, but no, they're going to stay independent, I think, forever.
Yeah. You mentioned Coach Fickell earlier and job offers he's had, and he's turned them all down, say to Cincinnati. I don't know how close you are to Coach Fickell. Do you know, is there a job he would leave for? Everybody's got their dream jobs. Ohio State obviously would be his.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much it?
Yep, right now. I think even this year, had the tables been turned and the timing be a little different with the Notre Dame job, Jack Swarbrick did not end up picking up the phone and calling Luke Fickell's agent and saying, is there a chance we could talk to Luke this week? And when that answer was probably absolutely not, we're getting ready to do this. We're going to go to the playoffs. You know, he don't want to be bothered. But if it would have been another year, another time, Luke and Amy being such strong, good Catholics, I could see him having entertained the Notre Dame job if it would have been good for both sides. As it turns out, it was a quick no if it even was approached. I'm not saying for a fact I know that they talked to him, but you know how that thing works on the back door. But they came out of it okay because they got Marcus Freeman anyway. And so I think they'll turn out to be good. You know, Notre Dame is a program that is perfectly set up for success. I mean, they're a top five team, and Marcus has taken that over. He's a rookie head coach, but almost everything at Notre Dame stayed in place. Nobody wanted to go with Brian Kelly and start all over down at LSU. So he couldn't have it any better, because it's going to be hard being a rookie head coach at Notre Dame. I don't say it's not going to be, but he's got a lot of the it factors going for him. And if there was ever a time you took a job and you had to put all your elements in place and interview all your coaches and you know, get your philosophy going, hire a strength coach, get recruiting back on track. If you're taking over a loser, all of that's washed away because he's taking over a marquee job. This is like Lincoln Riley being handed OU 5 years ago. It's hard to screw it up when, you know, even as young as you are. But if you just do the right things and just continue what BK started, Marcus will tweak it to his own personality. But other than that, I think that Luke Fickell will only go to Ohio State. I don't know if down the road, maybe the NFL might be in his eyesight. Somebody had even mentioned to me, had he have the year he's having right now, and had the Bengals had a bad year. I mean, right now, Zach Taylor's getting it going up there with Joe Burrow, and they're, you know, vying for the title of the conference. But if they had another down year, he could have been gone, and perhaps they would have pursued Luke Fickell to say, hey, do you have – because – and the reason I say that is because Mike Vrabel of the Titans and Luke Fickell are best friends. I mean, they're in each other's wedding, that whole deal. So any questions about how, why the NFL works, Luke can get those answers from Mike Vrabel and say, do you think, am I a fit? Am I not a fit? Brother, you can be honest with me, et cetera, et cetera. So that could be something down the road. But I think right now he's perfectly content in Cincinnati. He gambled on himself when you think about it, and he's come up a winner, won to the playoffs. What if it had taken the Michigan State job 2 years ago? He'd just be another guy, you know. And but right now he's in the college football playoff when no one gave him a chance to get there. And his program inside of 2 years, and I think it'll happen by 23 before, you know, not 24, about being in the Big 12. And, you know, how would you like to say, all right, we're going to invite you to the Big 12. And, oh, by the way, you don't even have to play Oklahoma or Texas, right? I mean, say it the way it is, right? Oklahoma and Texas are gone. You know, he can hang easy with all these other guys and kind of instantly be, you know, if you're the commissioner of the Big 12, everybody's crying about how bad the Big 12 is. They lose Oklahoma and Texas. Neither one of them did great this year. They're getting a college football playoff team. They're getting an 11-win Houston team. They're getting a team that went 5-0 against the Pac-12 and BYU. And the gold mine job still lies in Orlando with Central Florida. And that is still a diamond, not a diamond now, but it's just such a jewel of a job now that it's gotten into the Big 12. And they've got an all-star coach in, you know, Gus down there. So I think the Big 12 came out of this thing smelling like a rose, so to speak. They'll come out of it shining colors. And I'll tell you what, until Oklahoma and Texas get their act together, they won't be a dominant force in the SEC, okay? Because they don't know how to play offense and defensive line play. And there's where that separates what separates the SEC from mostly from the other leagues is the boys up front. I mean, I'm telling you, that line of scrimmage is what separates their league and everybody else. You got receivers, you got DBs, you got all that stuff. But what separates the ACC and the Big 12 from SEC territory is O linemen and D linemen.
Speaking of O linemen and D linemen, and how they have that level of player in the SEC and nobody else does. So we look ahead to the playoff. Cincinnati draws, of course, the kingpin of college football, Nick Saban, and the Alabama Crimson Tide. If you're going to do it, you might as well do it against the best, I guess. Although I wanted Cincinnati, Michigan. I wanted to see if Cincinnati could be more Ohio State than Ohio State and beat Michigan. That would have been so much fun. Yeah. But Cincinnati, you know, Alabama is what we get.
Kyle, it might have happened. I mean, you could have justified putting Michigan at number one. You know, Georgia gets beat. Michigan beats crap out of Iowa. They could have been moved up. But I just don't think they wanted a Georgia-Alabama rematch in the first round. And I think that had a lot to do with it myself. But if Michigan goes out and wins, Cincinnati goes out and wins, of course, you might get your dream matchup there.
Do you think Cincinnati could beat Alabama? I mean, obviously, anybody can beat anybody any given day, I guess. But how realistically do you think it is that Cincinnati could beat Alabama? One interesting thing to me is you mentioned Cincinnati's secondary.
Yeah.
And, you know, Alabama's receivers are good, but they're young. Those safeties and DBs in Cincinnati are grown men. Some of them have their AARP card at this point.
Yeah.
I like that matchup for Cincinnati. Their secondary against Alabama's wide receivers, and a lot of people may think that's foolish, but I really like that matchup.
You know, it really does negate the obvious advantage you would say Alabama would come walking in to start with is, hey, this is Alabama. 4, 5, 6 national titles, numerous NFL wideouts, first-round wideouts they've had constantly. It did help Cincinnati that they lost that one kid, Minchie, whatever his name is, you know, in the last game. I think what happens was when they played Georgia last year in the Peach Bowl, and things say about Georgia being uninterested and all that stuff, they matched up well with Georgia. Cincinnati is a big boy team. Now, they're not a lightweight. You guys have seen them up close. Yeah. They don't look like the old Conference USA teams. They really look like a Power 5 looking football team with 36 seniors, like you say, and a bunch of old men on there, so to speak. They are a mature football team with two great corners. I mean, they're going to be first and second round corners. And they got a good athletic quarterback. I think Cincinnati can hold their own. If Alabama wants to go big and decide to go big boy ball, can they Can Cincinnati's front hold up? I think they'll contain their passing game a little bit, but can they generate a rush on this quarterback, the Outland Trophy winner? So I worry more about generating pressure enough to make him throw the football like Georgia was able to do a little bit better. But I think the skill level is not, you know, what people would have thought years ago, the difference between Alabama and Cincinnati. That skill level matchup on the back end is not necessarily favored by Cincinnati, but it holds its own right there. But can they generate rush? Can they stop the run and maybe keep Alabama one-dimensional with trying to throw the deep ball all the time? So it's going to be a chess match. I don't know if Cincinnati can protect very well against Will Anderson and those kind of guys. I mean, that guy is a freak coming off the edge as a pass rusher. And so I worry about their ability. If Cincinnati plays, and I say this kind of respectful to Cincinnati, but if they just play a traditional offense, which they kind of are, they don't do a lot of real, real fancy things. They got Desmond Ridder, a good quarterback. They've always had good running backs. Ford's a big-time guy. He's an Alabama kid. Good, solid guys up front. They don't have where they are going to have a hard time. Nick's favorite way to play defense, as you know, is to play two high safeties and play the box as light as possible, but still stop it all, you know, because if he can keep people high. But right now, does Cincinnati have guys on the receivers other than that one white kid that's number 12, I believe? Do they have any guy that merits double coverage of any kind against Alabama? And I don't think they do. They don't have a ton of great speed at wideout. They got better speed at corner than they do wideout. I'm talking about Cincinnati. They're not a dynamic throwing team. Ridder can hit a moving target, certainly. But I think for them to move the ball effectively, they're going to have to run Ridder. If you look at what's always caused Nick Saban and Alabama defense's problems, it's multiple set offenses that shift, motion, confuse, because the whole Saban package is all about, let's put together about five calls that's got all these automatic calls in it, be it zone, be it nickel, be it pressure, be it fire zone, whatever. But the more that you move around, shift, motion, trade tight ends, it makes those linebackers have to make all these calls all over again. So they've been caught out of position just on a flat-out missed assignment, miscommunication, et cetera. If you line up just toe-to-toe, show them what your picture is and let Nick dial in, you'll have a hard time moving the football. That's anybody, whether it's Georgia or Cincinnati, you know, doing that against top-flight teams. But they, if you're just going to be a 12-team, or and they are, Cincinnati's a 12-personnel team. If they just line up in 12-personnel sets, Alabama will eat them up a little bit. But if they want to take those 12 personnel tight ends, maybe 13 personnel tight ends, and they put out some good tight ends at Cincinnati, right? Look at Jason Kelce. And then just start flexing those guys out, because Nick's going to be in base defense when you're in base offense. But if you do base things against his base guys, he's got better base guys. You know, he's got better players.
No doubt. But
if you take those guys and spread them out and trick them a little bit and move and disguise and get, you know, Ridder on the move a little bit, do some easy throws early in the game where he's got a chance to build his confidence. He's one of these guys that, as a quarterback, if it goes right for him early, it goes right for him all game. If it kind of goes rough early, then he starts pressing and, you know, flinching a little bit, and then he doesn't have a high percentage pass game on those games. So they've got the pieces, they've got the parts, but I think it's going to be critical how they use those parts and use maybe some things, or do some things, or create some things with the intermittent time frame that you have. You know, got that 4-week, 5-week period. You got to come up with a few new things and new wrinkles to really challenge Alabama.
Yeah, Coach, when you take a look at it, I really feel like Desmond Ridder is the X factor offensively for Cincinnati. His ability to run really is a huge factor in these games. And one of the things I've been really impressed with, you know, speaking of Coach at Cincinnati, is he's never been afraid to run Ridder. You know, you'll see a lot of college coaches around the country are can be a little hesitant to run their quarterback. You know, they won't call that zone read very often. They're hesitant to have the quarterback keep it. I've never seen that hesitation from Cincinnati, and he's been very effective, you know, over the years in that zone read scheme. And then also when it's not available downfield to throw the ball, he will take off and run. And I really believe for Cincinnati to win this game, and I, first of all, I agree with just about everything you said there, Coach. I think there's going to have to be two or three times where it's third and, you know, third and long, third and eight, third and nine, and Ritter's able to escape the pocket and make, make plays with his feet to keep that Alabama defense, you know, off rhythm a little bit. So, you know, I totally agree with you on that. Coach, I wanted to ask you, when you take a look at Bryce Young, Heisman Trophy quarterback from Alabama, true freshman, right? Such an impressive kid. How do you feel that, you know, you mentioned the corners from Cincinnati, just how tough they are. How do you feel like they'll be able to match up with Bryce Young? And do you feel like they'll be able to keep him contained a little bit?
Well, I think the corners at Cincinnati are going to be so focused on those wideouts. If they end up playing some man-to-man or combo-type coverages and they're stretched out of there, because it is a real vertical passing game, they're not afraid to throw it to Alabama. And if Bryce breaks a line of scrimmage, then I think he's got a chance to do some damage. You know, he's a guy that I think that has matured so much from day one to the last day down at Alabama. He didn't like to – I still don't think he likes to run. I mean, he sees himself as a pocket drop-back thrower, and he's a heck of a guy doing that. But even against Georgia, he took off and ran and did it with confidence and scored a touchdown or two and things like that. And maybe now he looks at himself. He's got this break of 3 or 4 weeks to kind of reflect. You know, he's got the trophy in his pocket and all that stuff. But I totally agree. He's – might be the X factor for them, just like you mentioned Ritter was for the other team. It's whose quarterback could run the most. But back to what you said, Matt, motion shifts, multiple offenses, and whether I said it and now you said it, the running quarterback has always given Nick Saban trouble. Florida this past year. Only because Dan Mullen could run his quarterback. That's how they kept the game close and, shoot, almost won the thing. Yeah, Johnny Manziel beat Nick. Watson at Clemson beat him. Trevor Lawrence at times beat him because running quarterbacks, you know, I've always said this on looking at it on defense, and you're a defensive guy. When you invented the running quarterback and the ride to side and the triple option, it's like having 12 men on the field. You get a guy that takes a snap like quarterback, but everything else, he's a runner, and you have to have the extra hat in the box to be able to defend that guy. And so I just think the running of Desmond, like you mentioned, could cause Nick all kinds of problems. Consequently, Bryce Young running the ball, taking it, getting away from the rush. And if, the more man-to-man you play, as you know, and that quarterback breaks the line of scrimmage, are you in a spy coverage or are you just all locked up man? Then all you got to do is break the first wave, and you're running a long way with that football. But it's going to be an interesting matchup and chess match from those standpoints. But I've encouraged the Cincinnati guys, mix it up, do some things you haven't done before, run your guy. I even told them that, run your guy. Like you mentioned, Matt, he's run all year. Don't put the shackles on him now. I mean, free this guy up, you know.
Matt, I don't know if you got anything else for Coach about this game. If not, I'm going to hit a couple other topics here before we start wrapping it up. You got anything else?
We did have one more question for you, Coach. Bubba actually was trying to chime in before, and I don't know if Bubba's with us right now. But Coach, we're curious if you were you able to hear Kirk Herbstreit's comments a few weeks ago regarding, you know, some of the comments he made when Cincinnati was first introduced into the playoff, when the official playoff was released. We wanted to get your thoughts on that if you heard it.
Refresh me. I've read a lot of his comments, but I thought at times Herbie was pro Cincinnati, and then I've heard where it's not been as much so.
Matt, do you have the exact quote?
Yeah. So really what happened was after Cincinnati was announced to be in the Final Four in the playoff, he basically was calling out the fans, and the exact quote was, "But I'm confused. What about the narrative that the Group of Five wasn't allowed to get in? I heard there was a lot of buzz out there that the committee would never put a Group of Five school in. It's weird. They must not have gotten that rule." So, you know, he was calling out the fans a little bit there. I thought it was a little bit elitist.
His daughter, Tamarindo, also.
Yep. you know, and like you said earlier, had Oklahoma State won that game, you know, there's a very good chance the committee leaves Cincinnati That's out. Right. So exactly. I don't know. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I just always thought from the beginning the committee did not want Cincinnati in. I mean, they're made up of a whole lot of Power Five guys. There are some group of five ADs on there. We've got people on the committee, it seems like now, that really shouldn't even be on the committee. Like there's a lay person or two, an outsider, a female, just to be gender equitable. I mean, do these people really follow? How many of these people really watch football games every Saturday or record them and watch them throughout the week? To be fair, exactly. I mean, they truly know what's going on. And that's why I said, you know, even down to the end when the coaches and the media look at a ranking, there's got to be something to it. You know, it's kind of like where there's smoke, there's fire. But the committee said, well, no, we get in there. So, well, the Houston, they're not, they shouldn't be there. What, how do you rationalize that? How do you rationalize putting Cincinnati all the way up to the top and keeping Houston all the way down at the bottom, you know, until they played that, you know, in the last end of the season? But no, I thought the guy I couldn't stand, and I like Lee Corso, and bless his heart. I mean, he's had a heck of a career, I tell you that and all that. But he was vehemently against the group of five. Every week it got closer and closer and closer to being a possible, inevitable. He just flat out said it, you know. I mean, he just said, there's no group of five should ever be in these playoffs. I mean, he's partly show, but he still speaks, and people listen. And they do have respect for Lee, but he, to me, puts his foot in his mouth, and that's, he should be above that, but he wasn't. He went overboard to try to kill the enthusiasm about the group of five. And, you know, I was around last, you know, 5 years ago when that was Central Florida doing all the crowing and the bitching about not getting in there. But the real number one problem was two problems they had. One, there was always three or four or five real hot, big-time teams up there, and then they never played that schedule where they ended up with a Notre Dame-like road win and an Indiana Big Ten. They didn't play outside their comfort zone. Just the schedule gods weren't good to them that year. And they had a good team. They might have been – they go to the Peach Bowl and beat Auburn that year, you know, instead of – because they were the group five representative. So they've always been good. And Cincinnati was good, but just not necessarily lucky, but everything fell right for them with the win at Notre Dame fell. Notre Dame kept winning. I mean, there's lots of things that had to happen. Okie State probably was the most secure thing that happened for them, that they didn't win. I would have been waiting for the big argument, though, like you, Matt, by saying Okie State. And you know what? I couldn't have totally disagreed. I mean, I'm a fan of Cincinnati, but you run that Big 12 gamut and you lose one game and you beat Baylor twice. If that would have been the case, you know, that would have been a feather too. If you just look at ranked teams, ranked wins, nobody had a road win like Notre Dame, but the rest of them had more quality wins if you really want to look at it that way. But I mean, I'm happy the way it turned out. Now let's go, but don't ever sell out Nick Saban, right? I mean, I turned on Nick. I didn't think he was going to win. They stumbled around all year, looked average as pie. But I tell you what, they all put the hammer down right at the right time, because I'm currently working over here in Nashville with Vanderbilt. Okay, my son, Jesse, 38 years old, is the defense coordinator. Okay. Under Clark Lee.
Great.
And
great.
So I moved to Nashville in August. That's going to be my residence. And so I finally, after about 4 weeks, got hired over there, you know, kind of as a part-time type analyst working with my son. So it's a joy. It's a pleasure. It's fun. But what wasn't fun was I saw Georgia up close. They beat a 62-0, and it could have been 100-0. And so I've just watched them, and I've watched a lot of SEC film this year, just doing my little, you know, advanced work for Jess. And Alabama is good. I don't care. I mean, they lost. You know, they're good, and they proved it on the biggest stage in the SEC title game. I think if they both advance and it ends up being an SEC game, that'll be a different game than what it was in that SEC game. I really do believe that. I think the advantage would shift a little bit, Georgia.
Yeah, Coach, I hope you get to enjoy Nashville a little bit too. You know, you've had a lot of coaching days. You need to take some time and enjoy Nashville a little bit too, right?
I tell you what, Matt, it's it's hard for me. I'm 67. You know, you feel like you're going on, you know, 47, and you know you can still do it. I was in both of those spring leagues. And I will mention this if I have a chance here. I was in the AAF league with Alabama team, the Birmingham team. And on our staff was Steve Logan and an offensive line coach named Dave Magazoo. And Dave passed away on Friday. Okay, so certainly our hearts and prayers go out to Kerry and his family. But Dave was a wonderful guy. He coached a long time right there for the Carolina Panthers with John Fox. You know, he was a college coach for 15, 16 years, pro coach for 14, 15 years. Wonderful man, great family guy. But, you know, that's, you know, he and I coached together three times. At NC State, we were together. Way back in 82, we were together at Ball State, 85, 86. And then fast forward all the way up to 18, 19 when they put that spring league together that Logan and Max came over. They became best friends, Steve Logan and Dave Magazoo. And they were O-line and O-coordinator. And we had a good time there. That was a good league and fun league. And I hope, and I think one's coming back this spring. I hope it does. But I coached in that one. Then I coached in the XFL. So it's not been long since I've had the whistle and all that. But I just – maybe I'm done, you know, but maybe I'm not. But at least I'm kind of living through my son and helping him and taking great pride, having three grandchildren up there, and everything's cool.
Coach, Magazoo's son played here.
That's right.
He was a safety.
Anthony, right? Was it Anthony?
Yeah. No, it was – God, I thought his name was Dave.
Damon?
Matt?
It was Damon. Damon, right?
Damon, yeah. Damon Magazoo. Thank you. It was a D. Yeah, Damon Magazoo. I did not realize his dad just passed away, so thoughts and prayers.
Yeah.
To the Magazoo family, absolutely.
I didn't find out till last night. I mean, I got a – it's kind of funny. All of us in that Birmingham team still – you know, somebody's just got a group text alive still out there, you know. Yeah. So all we do if we want to shout and all this kind of stuff, somebody puts something out there, then everybody chimes in. So we had just did – I looked at my phone last night. We had just had one last Tuesday or Wednesday, and here's Dave chirping and saying all this kind of stuff, you know. And then all of a sudden this obituary was dated that he died on the 17th. So 2 days later, after talking to all of us by text, you know, he passes away suddenly. I don't know the details, but it's certainly tragic. I mean, he and I were really good friends, and he's a great football coach and a great family man more than anything. And he contributed a lot to the game. So, you know, right there with Magazoo playing for you guys. And Dave was always a big fan of East Carolina football, because they took his son, okay? And the coaches that were there at that time know Dave Magazoo, because he came on the official visit and all that kind of stuff, you know. So he was very fond of the Pirates. I know that.
And Damon Magazoo was a great player for us. Everybody remember, I think, Mags mostly for the interception in overtime to seal the victory against North Carolina State in 2010. Coach, we'll hit some quick topics with you, and we'll wrap it up. It's going to be a rapid fire. I'll start with the college football playoff, the ongoing discussion of expansion to 12. If it ever happens, you know, the one scenario that's been thrown out that I think anybody in the so-called group of five would be a fan of is the five Power Five conference champions getting an automatic bid, and one school from the group of five, the highest ranked champion, getting an automatic bid. With six 100%. At largest, I think that would be a game changer.
100% for it. I'm for more the better. We've had so many arguments and good teams left out, and there really is, by the end of the season, 10 or 12 teams. That it's kind of how you're playing at the end of the year. Do you get hot? But I'm for that. You know, the layout right now, if they do it, would be where, what, four or five teams get a bye, I think four teams, and the other teams go play. I mean, they'd work it out. But I'm for 12 at least. I'm not necessarily all the way up to 16, 18. That's starting to water it down. But I think there's 10 or 12 teams in this country that probably could have a shot at it. It becomes a little bit more March Madness-like, right, where the best team might not be at number 10, but they could end up winning the thing. So it's a lot of games to play. I mean, it adds another layer or two. But I don't think there's a kid in the country who wouldn't say, you know, at East Carolina, that if we could be that group of five, do we mind playing four games or three games, whatever it would take to get yourself to the finals?
No, of course not. It would be fantastic. And if you have that situation with East Carolina or any other group of five teams, I don't think you'd have players opting out as we go to our next topic. Players opting out of bowl games to because they're
like I don't like it.
That's short and sweet. Yeah.
No, but I mean, you just look at it from their standpoint. Yeah, I get it. I think 20 years from now, every kid who opted out of a bowl game is going to regret it. Okay. Yeah, that he missed. It's you're a senior or whatever you are, whether you're going to declare out or whatever. And this is your last opportunity to don the pads with your brothers who got you there. And I'm picking on the quarterback from Pitt. Okay. He came back to win. They together as a team won the first ever ACC title for Pitt. And all of a sudden, and then he's up on that Heisman stage a week ago as a finalist. Okay. So lots of players on that team had a lot to do with him being on that stage. And then all of a sudden he just says, I'm not going to play. And I get it, you know, what's happening is too many people are getting into the ears of the players nowadays, whether it's agents or everything else. They're doing it like analytics, you know, like, hey, you know, the percentages say you might be hurt in this ball game. Hey, dude, you just played 40 college games. You could have been hurt in any one of them to where you're not even on that Heisman stage. And you're doing it for your school. You're doing it for your coach. You're doing it for your teammates. I don't know. I just don't like it. Ironically, what is it? Michigan State playing Pitt, and yeah, both stars yeah. are going to opt out. And, you know, and you go back to the one. Yeah. You go back to the game where the linebacker from Notre Dame got hurt that time. Okay. And he missed the draft. Oh, he didn't miss the draft. The Dallas Cowboys said, okay, we got something up our sleeve. We'll draft the kid in the second round, but redshirt him because he's not going to play this first year. Then he came out the next year, was totally 100% well, and all of a sudden he's playing like gangbusters. So his career got back on track. You don't want any injury for any kid, but they take an example of one injury and say, this could happen to you. Well, you know, we'd get run over by a truck tomorrow if we walked outside, you know.
Yeah, no doubt. And as we're speaking of this, the Conference USA Player of the Year, the running back for UTSA, opted out of the Frisco Bowl against San Diego State. And UTSA playing for their 13th win of the year is down 31-17. So there you go. You opted out, and he opted out, and he's standing on the sideline. I'm kind of surprised
the teammates. I mean, you can't get rid of them, you know. I mean, you got to embrace. You got to this day and age with player rights and all that. You got to embrace the guy. Say, okay, you got to do what's right for you and your family and everything else. But I still don't believe the kid ought to do it, and then it shouldn't get to that. Whether you accept him or not, he should never do it. But that's me. Okay. I respect their rights to choose. And that's what the country's about is their right to choose. It'd be interesting to follow all these guys who opted out and then kind of just see what happens to their careers.
And each pick of player rights, that takes us into the next topic, name, image, and likeness. That's a complicated subject to me, and I like it to a point, but I think it needs to be reeled in and policed a little bit better.
I was talking to Shank the other night, and I said, Shank, this was after signing day. I said, you know, I'm not as involved in it now. Vanderbilt's not quite as involved. And I said, tell me your most bizarre story this first 6 months of this NIL. What are you hearing out there? He said, well, all I know is I'm an O-line guy. We're looking for O-linemen. But if you're an O-lineman at Tennessee, you're going to get $50,000 a year. Wow. And then I'm over here in Texas visiting family right now. And my brother says, there's an article out already. This big company down here in Texas somewhere has already made it clear. They're all Texas alums and everything else. And if you're an offensive lineman for Texas, $50,000 a year. Now, good for the kids who are making that kind of money. And I don't mind the kid signing somewhere, getting paid. I don't like it that the other topic you're going to talk about is the portal. Okay. So now with the portal and the right to pay, you have free agency.
Yep.
You just have college free agency, because anymore, you're going to end up with a mid-major / group of five that has a star. He'll never see 4 years at that school because the money would be too big to where somebody can get in his ear and say, hey, listen, we need you to transfer to Auburn or Alabama or Georgia. And here's who you need to go call about, seeing what kind of price that's going to be for you. Because technically the schools don't get involved in the money in the NIL or anything else. But it's funny how all the coaches know who all's making what on the team. Okay. Yeah. So they don't monitor it. They can't stop it. It's all a law now. It's not what it was intended to be. Remember, this thing started 10 years ago. Yep. Basketball players at UCLA seeing themselves on computerized games, and they saw Ed O'Banion's name on the back of a jersey, and they say, you know, these dudes are selling this and making money. We don't get anything. Might have been a joke even. So they're selling these games. We're not making anything. So they go get a lawyer, and that started everything about, okay, mm-hmm. I got you. And for that to happen, I totally agree with the law. Nobody should be able to put your name on something that you don't have a say about, that you don't get compensated for. But does that apply to all the things that are about to happen and is going on in buying and selling the players in college and bidders? I mean, they said, it's a funny thing the other day, A&M snuck in there and got that number one class at the end. And my financial people live in Atlanta. And this guy, one of them down there, is a LSU grad. And I've been talking to him about LSU and Brian Kelly and everything. He says, Rick, I got a text today, late in the day, once it was proclaimed that A&M was that number one class, you know, for Jimbo. And they're just 40-year-olds texting each other saying, hey, listen, dude, how you like this, you know, this Aggie A1 class we got over here, huh? Said, get used to it, man. The Aggies know what they're doing now with all of us. You know, that means all these Aggie boosters are in line and they're just lining up, paying those guys like crazy. And that used to be called cheating. Now it's just called NIL. I mean, it's not any different. It's just now legal to do. It's part of the law. But I'm 5 years. You know, how does it affect not the game, but maybe the game? Because now all of a sudden, you know, these real rich alums, they might want to make some money on the side, right? They might want to make some money with having the outcome of the game kind of come out the way they want to with the bookies. So what mm-hmm. could they do to those players who are on their payroll now? I mean, that's things the NCAA fought years and years to make sure never happened, which has happened before. And now money is nowhere to be traced. And so you don't ever know what's going to happen in some of these games.
Yeah, and the NCAA gave up their power years ago to the TV contracts and the TV networks, and it just continues to get worse and worse, in my opinion. Coach, we could probably go on that stuff all night. I agree with you. I'm sort of a traditionalist with college football. I hate to see all this NIL and portal nonsense. But a few rapid-fire questions for you, Coach. I'm going to put you on the spot, all right? I'm going to put you on the spot. Who's your prediction to win the Cincinnati-Alabama game? And then who will ultimately win the national title?
Okay.
And I don't want to get you in trouble, Coach, with the Cincinnati people.
I'll pull for the underdog Cincinnati.
Okay.
And then I think Georgia will win the national title.
Okay, I like it. I like any score prediction, Coach, on the Cincinnati-Alabama game?
No, not really. I think for Cincinnati to pull it off and win, it would have to be a lower score than a higher score. I don't see them matching points. But if their defense can play, they can shut those corners down and keep that thing in the high teens and maybe 20s. I think Cincinnati might could hang with them and who knows, pull it off, get a late score to win the game.
Okay. And, Coach, one more for you, and I don't know if you're going to be able to answer this one. It's okay if you can't. But you've had a very long – tremendous career, college coaching. Let's just focus on college. Who would you say is the most talented head coach that you've ever worked with? If you can name one.
I think right now, one of the I was fortunate at Cincinnati. I had John Harbaugh, Rex Ryan, Mike Tomlin, all on my staff. They went on up to the higher level.
Wow.
But when I had Jimbo Fisher on my staff, star in the waiting, and now look at him at A&M, got number one class, beat Nick. He's the only pupil who's ever beat the teacher. I think they're in store for great things. He's going to have to replace his D coordinator and his strength coach, so he's got his work cut out for him. But I think Jimbo Fisher was a guy you spotted young. I hired him when he's 33. Nobody else would hire him as a coordinator. I went down to Atlanta, interviewed him after he was on that Terry Bowden staff at Auburn. He was just a young quarterback coach. But I saw in him what it would take for us to have a good offense, and he did that. And then all of a sudden, at the end of the year, the quick story here was Nick Saban, remember, left Michigan State in 99 after the season and got the LSU job. He sends a plane to Lansing, Michigan that afternoon and says, anybody who wants a job from Michigan State, get on that plane today. You're coming with me. Nobody got on that plane. Okay. That tells you a little bit about Nick, obviously. But he goes down there and has to build a staff from scratch. And he then calls me because he tells me the story. This is how he told me the story. He says, yeah, and you know, Nick, he watches all games, all films, and he's a coordinator. He's the defense coordinator. He says, I'm watching your Ohio State game a couple of weeks after hours, and you guys move the ball up and down the field on those guys, put about 500 on them, even though you weren't talented enough to win the game. And I wrote Jimbo Fisher's name down on my manila folder because he said, I keep a list going. Anytime I spot a good-looking coach that I might need to talk to someday, I'm always got that next guy ready to go. And I wrote Jimbo Fisher. I looked it up. Who was your coordinator? It's Jimbo Fisher. I wrote his name down because of how you guys played against Ohio State. And I said, if I ever need it, I'm going to look into that guy. And he said, Rick, that's why I'm calling you. He told me that whole story. And then he brings Jimbo down, hires him. And that started his relationship with Jimbo in 2000. They won the title in 03. You know, Jimbo won one at Florida State as the head coach, and now he plans on trying to win one at A&M, which, you know, might be easier said than done. But I think Jimbo ranks up there as one of the – if you're talking about a guy that was under me a little bit, coming up on my staff, and you kind of saw greatness in him from the get-go.
Coach, for some of the staffs you had at Cincinnati, if they would have invested in football financially like they do now back then, you might would have been able to do what's happening now.
You know, Kyle, I was never afraid to hire what I call from the top down, you know, and that's picking guys like NFL type guys or fired coaches that you kind of knew wouldn't be there long because we were just that mid-major. There's always greener grass out there. But I just think it's a fine line. Do you build your staff with transients or you don't have continuity? But are you better by their presence and therefore better when they leave because of what they left you with? So you have to balance that out. But I struck gold with hitting Rex Ryan and hiring a young Mike Tomlin and then having John Harbaugh and Joker Phillips and Jimbo Fisher and, you know, Donnie Treadwell. And I mean, I had about 8 or 10 guys who somewhere along the way became a head coach at Pro War College. Tons of guys who coached in the league. I had 5 great offensive line coaches come through there. I had Paul Dunn. I had Larry Zerline, I had Bob Wiley, I had Stacy Searles, and I had Steve Shankweiler. Every one of those guys are top shelf O-line guys because you better be good on the O-line or you don't even have a chance to have a program.
Yeah, no doubt. And 2 more things and we're going to wrap it up, I promise. 1, don't have a chance you've had to watch East Carolina play this year. Mike Houston, year number 3, 7-5, going back to a bowl game for the first time in 2014. Pirates and the Eagles in the Military Bowl, Boston College. Yep. Any thoughts on that game our fans are going to know?
You know, I think, first of all, you look at Mike, you know, you hire consistency. Look what he did when he, like, at Lenore Ryan or somewhere sometime or one of those.
Yeah, schools. Lenore Ryan, the Citadel, and James Madison. He's successful everywhere.
Just follow the money, like, follow the record. And now he ends up at East Carolina. It takes time to build things. And this is 3rd year. Next year will be the 4th year, and I think it'll be his year to really take off. But this year, it's going to be a heck of a matchup because I like the head coach over at Boston College. Jeff Hatley, the guy that came over from Ohio State, is a defensive guy, so obviously he's after my heart. But it's going to be a good matchup. You have some guys that, you know, people didn't always recruit all those guys. But Steve, you know, Steve Logan, all the guys who've ever coached at East Carolina have done a great job player development. You always have guys getting in the NFL from both programs. But I just think that it will be a heck of a matchup. Records are similar. And I'll pull for the Pirates, certainly in this ball game. I got a lot more friends in Greenville than I do in Chestnut Hill.
Absolutely. And one more thing for you, just a fun question. Do you have a favorite Christmas movie, and what is your favorite holiday food?
You know, I just watched Scrooge a couple of nights ago with Bill Murray. I remember where I was when I watched it for the very first time. And I was up in recruiting Northern Indiana, and I was up around South Bend. Little did I know I would be there on two different occasions. But I had an afternoon in between recruiting, and I was a Saturday Night Live fan, therefore Bill Murray and all that kind of stuff. But I went over and watched Scrooge at just an afternoon matinee by myself. And it hasn't changed whatsoever. It's a tremendous movie done with a little bit more modern flavor than the old Christmas stories. But food. Well, you know, if you'd make me a good turkey and dressing, I can always eat that for Christmas. Even though not turkey like or ham and dressing or anything that's got good carbs with it, you know, good pecan pie. You know, that's a North Carolina favorite over there. So
that's a very popular dish, Coach. You know, Kyle, isn't that your favorite?
Matt is a Jersey boy, and I don't know how you miss it when you're in Eastern North Carolina. Never had pecan pie.
I've never had it, Coach, and everybody keeps talking about this. So I think, listen, Christmas is a few days away. I'm going to the bakery. I'm getting the best pecan pie I can find. And I'll let you guys know.
In North Carolina, they call it pecan pie. In Texas,
it's pecan pie. That's right.
Just a pecan pie. Okay. But I won't ever forget when I went to NC State for the first time, therefore a Carolina guy there, the pig picking, the name pig pickings.
Oh, yeah.
Now, that's holy words because I just came from Arkansas, right, where the hogs are worshipped, and over there you're freaking killing the things and roasting them and putting them down on the ground and all that. But I won't ever forget, we had a great secretary lady who had this typical, I mean, if I ever classify a North Carolina twang or accent, it was Carolyn Stewart, our secretary at NC State a long time ago. She served like four or five head coaches. And the way she talks is, well, we just going to go down there and do a pig picking this afternoon. And I'm telling you what, there's nothing like a good pig picking now. I'm telling you that I'm a big fan of those. But I still
absolutely. A pig picking is an Eastern North Carolina tradition, and right. I don't know if the folks in Raleigh can do it quite like the people that are truly down east. But you know, we can rival over that like we do everything else. And Matt, if you're going to be in Annapolis, my wife is making two pecan pies. We will bring you a piece on the 26th.
Bring it. I'm in.
What part of New Jersey are you from?
If you're familiar with the Jersey Shore, Coach, Monmouth County, which is not far from, like Belmar, Point Pleasant, that area, not about an hour from New York City.
Yeah. Whenever I first got hired at NC State, I was like 25 years old. Monty Kiffin was the head coach. Most people forget Monty was ever a college coach. You know, it's been so long ago. Monty, when he was at Nebraska years and years ago, would recruit New York, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. So I was his little GA hire that turned assistant. And he says, I'm going to let you do what I always used to do, you know, treat me like his little boy. And he sent me to New York and New Jersey. And there I am from Nash, Texas, right? So you're talking about a fish out of water. But I recruited all up and down Jersey, New York, the Bronx, all the boroughs, and then went down the shores. Then I spent 3 years in Philly coaching 2013, 2014, 2015 with the Eagles. And of course, the thing to do in Philly is what? Go to the shore. Everybody always talks about go to the shore. You know, it's about an hour drive down there. Unless you're going on Friday afternoon, then it's about a 4 hour drive. But I've done the stay over at Cape May. You know, I've been in Atlantic City on the boardwalk. I mean, I've done a lot of things in Jersey that are just cool. You know, up there where, what's his name? Born in the USA.
Springsteen.
Yeah, Springsteen. Yeah. But, you know, you got to do that. You know, you got to go up there where he used to hang out or probably still does. I'm a big Bon Jovi fan who's a Jersey boy. And, you know, John is really a very generous person. And I've met him at the Sugar Bowl. He's good friends with Charlie Weiss. So, you know, I've had lots of friends from Jersey. Gotten to know it a whole lot better as time went on. It was good to get back up there in 13, 14, 15 and go see the shore again. So, and I got a son living in New York City right now. So,
oh, nice. Well, since we're talking food, you know, you probably, hopefully you got to experience, you will never find better Italian food anywhere in the United States than the state of New Jersey. So hopefully you got to experience that while you were
South,
there.
Coach. South Philly has some pretty good Italian food restaurants. You know, what was the name? Luigi's. Something in Luigi's was one of my favorite spots down in South Jersey. But, you know, I went to the Eagles, you know, weighing about 210. 3 years later, I left there weighing 245. I mean, life was good in this city. I lived right in Rittenhouse Square. But just Philly, you know, is such a diverse, you know, ethnic type city, you know. And I love the food. I mean, just love all the different, you know, caliber restaurants. But I love Italian food, I'll tell you that.
Well, Coach, we appreciate you being generous with your time. Always great to have you on. I believe this is your third or fourth visit with us on the podcast.
Yeah, anytime, fellas. Just call me up.
Absolutely. And have a great Christmas and enjoy bowl season.
Appreciate it. Happy holidays to everybody. Matt, good seeing you again.
Hey, Coach, thank you so much. Really enjoyed meeting with you. Have a great holiday.
You bet. Same to you guys.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Thank you.
Well, Matt, I think we've said about all that can be said tonight. It was great having Coach Minter on. He's a great interview because you just give him something and he goes.
It's so funny, Kyle. I was thinking the same thing. I think of all the interviews we've done this year, I really enjoyed that one. Really appreciate his knowledge. And he's so up to speed on everything in the college football world, the names, the programs, everything going on. Just a very knowledgeable guy and certainly a great coach. So that was awesome. And, you know, we always like to talk food on this show, so that was a good way to wrap it up.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I don't know if Bubba's got any of the overlays ready, if anything we need to promo or not. If not, then we'll just wrap it up without him. Bubba, I don't know if you're here. All right. I guess we have no promos. He's nothing to wrap it up with. So
he's got an overlay ready. He just texted.
All right. Good. All right.
So
we're waiting on that overlay.
Yeah. While we're waiting, Kyle, did you have a final score prediction on the Cincinnati-Alabama game?
Oh man, not really. I'd have to really analyze it a little more. I want to take Cincinnati, but obviously, realistically, I can't do it. I'll say Alabama 31, Cincinnati 20. Military Bowl, there we go, December 27th, 2:30 p.m. Get your tickets, 1-800-ECU, ecupirates.com, East Carolina Boston College. If you're on the fence, it's time to jump off, you know, hit up on the 26th. You can get up early in the morning on the 27th and make any time. Hotels are getting scarce in Annapolis, so you might have to stay over in nearby Bowie or however you say that, Bowie, or maybe in D.C., Baltimore. There's plenty of hotels in the surrounding areas. But got some opt-outs from Boston College. I believe we have three offensive linemen have rumored to have opt-out, three or four. We have an injury on their D-line. They may be without one of their star safeties. So hopefully these things will be advantage East Carolina. We'll see come game time. They got a lot of talent, though. So, you know, their second and third string guys are still good. They're still ACC school that recruits well. But looking forward to getting after it on the 27th in Annapolis and see if we can – beat Boston College, get win number 8, and something Coach Houston hasn't done yet, Matt, is get a win over an ACC school.
Yeah, and I think this is going to be the time to do it right here. I mean, it's a great opportunity for us. You know, I hate to hear all these players opting out, honestly, for a lot of reasons, but when you play a team, you want to play a team at their best. So I personally hate to see that, but hey, I think we'll have a team that's ready to go. We should be fresh, we should be healthy, and we should be motivated. I think we're going to get it done.
I don't care who's playing for them. If we beat them, I'm going to celebrate it like we won the national championship and brag and rub it in their face. But anyway, guys, I guess we'll wrap this thing up. Have you got anything else, Matt?
I'm all good, man. That was a good show, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank everybody for listening to and watching the Sports Objective Podcast. We will be back with you. I don't know if we have a show Thursday night or not, but if we don't, we will be back with you sometime around bowl week, I'm sure, to talk about the bowl game. So for Matt, I'm Kyle, and for Bubba and Dave, you've been watching and listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Go Pirates.